This is Ryan Dawson of the ANC Report, the Anti-Neocon Report. Back again rather quickly, Greg Felton. You should get his books below. You have The Host and the Parasite and Exploding Middle East Myths. Is that the second book, I believe?
That is right.
That's right.
Both of those, I like The Host and the Parasite because I haven't read the other one yet, but I am going to order that book. But I have heard you talk about it, so from that I can gather it's a good book.
Yeah, I had a good time. I had a good time on English television. I was interviewed on Panorama, and Gilad Atzmon was championing my book. And there was an interesting debate between him and some token Zionist. It was quite a good show. The Zionist got just clobbered. It didn't look like his heart was in it either. It looked like he was just there to provide some sort of opposition, but again, he didn't have anything really intelligent to say.
That's it's funny because he's the next guest is Gilad Osman, right after you.
Oh, say hi to him for me. He's a good friend of mine.
Yeah, mine too. I know his kids and everything. he used to come to Japan regularly, and to do jazz, and we would also have him come and talk and eat dinner and so on. Michael Kyle and Gilad Osman and myself, and I used to be the trio here in Japan. But Gilad is like, he likes my magic. Boy, he's like, you should drop this 9/11 and all that and just be a magician.
Oh, you do magic tricks. Okay.
Yeah, it's a hobby of mine. He's one of those types that's like, tell me how you did it. No. Tell me how you did it. No.
Well, maybe you can make Israel disappear.
Well, I did this funny, like, Gilad's an ex-Jew, and I go, well, let's see. So I always have coins, you know, as a magician. And I hold up a Japanese 500 yen. It looks like a gold coin. And it's just a little fun joke I do with Jewish friends is, like, throw it and bounce it off the table and see, like, how quickly they can grab it. So, it just, you know, it's for fun. And I throw it down. Before it hit the table, Gilad caught it in the air. It's like, the Jew force is strong with you. You can't shake it. It doesn't wash off. Whatever. And then he drops it. I was like, no. You already caught it. And he was pretty spry.
He's great. Yeah, he's great fun. Mm-hmm. We did a show together in Seattle. I think it was in 2015. We were giving presentations with a third person about Israel. And I haven't seen him for a few years. I just hope he just drops by the northwest part of the U.S. again. I can just cross the border, which I never like to do anymore. I always feel like I'm entering a police state. I never used to think like that.
Oh, it got horrible after Chertoff peddled his wares with L3 Communications and got all the body scanners and the rest of the useless stuff. And what's so funny about that is any time they've done tests and trying to get past the TSA, they always can. You know, it's just like a false sense of security, but it's, you know, like a lot of MIC gear, it's just there for the sake of profiteering, and it is a police state. I mean, I'd still rather live there than Canada. I mean, because...
Why is that?
Because of Trudeau, no homo. I feel like you have to say no homo after you say Trudeau.
No, Trudeau.
No, I just wouldn't live Trudeau in Canada because it's too cold. That's such a petty reason, but it's, I know I'm from an island. I'm like, I'm not dealing with negative anything degrees.
Well, I guess you'd never lived in Minnesota.
Hell no. I would never go. I wouldn't go above the Mason-Dixon line, man. I'm like, too much really? Ice, too much ice for me. I hate cold weather. Screw that. Well,
it's amazing sometimes you're getting frost and snow down in Florida now.
Yeah, sometimes. They have snowbirds too.
Yeah, they're the Quebecois that go down there to live.
They're gonna rename Florida Brand New Jersey. They already have a New Jersey. You're gonna have Brand New Jersey in Florida with all the Jerseyites that migrate to Florida for the winter.
I guess you're gonna have to set yourself up in Phoenix or someplace where it gets to be about 40 degrees Celsius in summertime.
That's fine with me.
Oh, that's okay.
I'll take that desert weather as long as it's not humid.
No, it's not humid at all. It's very dry.
That's what I liked when I was out in Vegas and stuff. I'm like, this, in LA too, this is great weather. I mean, it's hot sometimes, but it doesn't have the humidity. I've lived in like Williamsburg, Virginia, which is basically a swamp. not out of Japan too, is sticky hot, like ridiculous, like salt coming through your clothes, you know.
Oh God.
But whatever, it keeps all the old folks and stuff inside, and it's less crowded, and yeah.
I imagine that Japan would be very humid. It would be very unpleasant in the summer.
Oh, it's horrible. But that's what I like, because it keeps a lot of people away.
Is Korea the same?
Korea's not. Nowhere. Korea has more windy than Japan. They're both pretty mountainous, pretty humid. And Japan's very lush, very green. You know, you think of these mega cities, but that's all packed in one little spot. And but most of it's mountains and forest. And I live out in rice paddies, so it's pretty humid.
You grow your own rice, do you?
I used to grow my own rice. I had rice and beans and several things, actually, but not anymore. Too many typhoons wiped that out. We did three in a row.
Oh, dear.
It's done. I looked at it. I'm like, all right, done with that. I took Jim Rogers' advice literally. I'm like, hey, I'm in Asia and farming. Because he was saying that. And it's like, they got an Asian population. And I'm like, so I wrote him a letter about it. It's like, hey. I wasn't here just to do that. I was here anyway. I was like, hey, might as well do some farming. Jim Rogers is saying to do it.
We have a garden here. We have lots of tomatoes, garlic, and potatoes. And we have to harvest a few pretty soon. It's getting cooler over here.
I do have some mini tomatoes and like cucumbers and stuff still, actually.
Forgot. We have cucumbers here too.
I wouldn't consider it farming. It's more just like some in the yard. It's not like the
nice it's not commercial or for profit farming. It's like subsistence, you know, you're farming for yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
no, but I used to have rice, tea. Like I had like a nice strip there doing it with the family. So yeah. Used to farm in North Carolina too. Used to do that a little bit.
Oh, North Carolina. That's tobacco country.
Well, we were doing strawberries, but yeah, it is tobacco country, like for sure. I always like, hey, I don't mind that. It's like, you don't have to buy it. It's like, nothing wrong with selling it. I feel like I'm helping Darwin's law.
Oh, yes, Darwin's law. Yeah.
It's like, if you're dumb enough to put something in your lungs and smoke it that literally says this is poison on the package, that's your fault.
Yeah, the Darwin Awards. I think you can't really study for those, can you?
I witnessed one live, actually.
Really?
There was a guy, Nathan Jones, who he was on the beach in Cape Hatteras, where I'm from, in the town of Buxton, and I forget which year it was, but he was a Darwin Award nominee. He accidentally buried himself alive.
Oh my God!
And it was like, I think he was just digging a hole. And sometimes I think he was the same guy I'd seen years prior. Like, he would do these very elaborate like sandcastles and stuff. And I don't know, he'd built like a shape, is ironically something shaped like a grave kind of. And I think he was going to use that as like his paper, like to draw on and build whatever. But he dug a big hole. But what people who aren't native to islands don't understand is, yeah, 90% of the time the sand's kind of the same sand, you know. But it does go through certain phases after certain weather and stuff, where you get like cookie layers on the top and smush and so on. And you got to be careful sometimes if you're digging hole for like a beach fire or something like that. But he was sitting like Indian style and digging with like his back, and I guess he must have. This is just our guess. Must have like thrown some behind or whatever, and that whole mound he had just collapsed on top of him. And because he didn't have his leg, like his legs were crossed under him, he just got like smushed down there like a crab. And maybe he inhaled a bunch of sand, you know, trying to get air, and just suffocated and died in his own hole, dug his own grave literally. And you know, no one was around to see him. Like, somebody saw it happen like from a motel porch at quite a distance, that had to like yell, run down 3 flights of steps and then go over the dune and run to the beach. And, you know, that's too long. We dug him out, and he was actually alive when we got him out. His mother and his fiance, actually, this is what's so sad. I mean, just screaming like you've never heard a human being scream, because he's dying right in front of them. And like, we got him out, got the sand out of his lungs with this like contraption they had, but he died on the helicopters. That island, we don't have a hospital. We don't even have a doctor's office. So when something major happens, you go on the helicopter and usually die on your way to Elizabeth City or something. But and that's what happened. But then later he was nominated for a Darwin Award. They had kind of fudged the story a little, but I always wondered whether those things were real or not because some were so ridiculous. And I witnessed that one, and it was there, and so it is very real, the Darwin Award. Ironically, I've been around two of them. There was another guy in Brownsville, Virginia, that killed himself by kicking a drink machine and shaking it, and it fell on him, and he died. And that was, I know there was a store. It was right next to Western Avalon High School, where I finished high school. And so I don't know. All around me are Darwin nominees. And it is so funny when you see it, though. It was like, man, I don't think that shit's funny anymore. But because I'd laughed at him, I'd looked him up online and been like, ha ha. But now I think, man, any death is tragic. Unless it's a ginger, then it's still funny.
Why is that funny?
I'm sorry, I forgot your wife had red hair. Okay, so my ginger bashing is this thing. I don't care. I'm colorblind, actually. So that's what's funny. I don't even know someone's ginger. But I didn't even hear the word ginger till like 8 years ago. It was always redhead my whole youth, whatever. But
yeah, me too. I don't know why they call them gingers. It's kind of a stupid word.
It started from Gilligan's Island. There's a redhead named Ginger.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't like a widespread thing until South Park. This is my hypothesis.
It was, yes.
So I think that's what did it in. But it had been around, mostly, ironically, even though Gilligan's Island is, an American show or Canadian. It's an American show.
Oh, yes.
They picked up the ginger in the UK from the Gilligan's Island show. But it wasn't really widely said in the U.S. South Park made it said in the U.S. But anyway, my ginger bashing is a kind of a dog whistle showing that, look at all the crap I can say about redheaded people on Facebook, Twitter, etc. I never get censored or banned. But because they're not the privileged class, right? If I even say, and even as a joke about you know who, I will be ovened right away, right? So, yeah, my ginger bashing is not sincere. It's just something that I use as a tool to prove that it doesn't matter any white subcategory. I could pick on blondes. I could pick on Southerners. I could pick on Christians. Yeah. It wouldn't matter. Yeah. Recently, I've been going after Kukistanis and that's Sweden and the British. And taking a piss at the British is so fun because a lot of them don't get that I'm not sincere, and man, they completely lose their shit. And that's what's better because redheads, you don't get a reaction. I guess they get picked on enough, so like, whatever. Also, it's so stupid. Like, who's actually prejudiced to red hair? Everyone knows it's not a real thing. But the British people lose their minds on me sometimes. Some of them do. Some of them have a good sense of humor, but some of them really lose it. And your British redheads, I guess they're out. They probably have a fucking, like, wanted poster of me. I don't know. But, yeah. Well, let's talk about Israel and Iran, man. That's why we shot the shit. But
yeah, okay.
There's this recent attack on a parade, and they blamed it on an Arab separatist group and, you know, hitting Persians. And people think, okay, they're trying to foster sectarian violence. We're going to go to war with Iran. And we know Israel's wanted a war with Iran for a long time, but it just seems like a lot of hot air. I mean, how many times can they cry wolf?
Well, you have a lot of people who believe it. They can cry wolf as often as they want. And this is one of the tragedies of Iran, and is that Israel has so much control over the Western media. So many loyal sock puppets, whether it's CNN, MSNBC, The New York Times, Washington Post, The Daily Telegraph, or whole, you name it. I mean, Israel has a built-in platform to say whatever it wants. And the real irony here is that Israel has no fear of Iran at all. I mean, there's no scenario conceivable under which Iran would attack Israel. Because any attack on Israel would kill far more Palestinians than it would kill Israelis. And Iran is not going to kill Palestinians.
It would also bring the U.S. down on your head.
That's quite possibly true as well. So there's no scenario conceivable in which Iran would initiate hostilities. But you see, what people don't understand, or I imagine many don't understand, is that this is not a military matter. This is not a matter of national security for anybody. It's a matter of political arrogance on Israel's part. Israel cannot tolerate Iran for two reasons. One, Iran is a very powerful, very respected, traditional country that really doesn't need Israel to survive. Iran represents stability at a time when Israel wants to destroy the Middle East. It's a Shia country, Iran is, which means it doesn't subscribe to the standard or the most common Sunni Muslim philosophy that most countries follow, most Muslim countries follow. So it's a threat. It represents a threat to Israel's ally, Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that Iran is a Iran is a status quo power, and Israel doesn't want that. Israel wants to destroy Iran because Iran could also develop nuclear power, and the nuclear power that Iran wants to develop is not military. I mean, if Iran developed civilian military power, that would be perfectly legal, perfectly acceptable. I mean, look, plenty of countries have nuclear power. And if you go back to 1996, Gary Sick, who used to be a major, 2005, pardon me, Gary Sick, who was a former member of the Pentagon, he was one of the specialists in the Persian Gulf. He was around during the Shah period, late 76 to 81. And he said at the time that the United States supported Iran's nuclear program. I mean, the Shah himself said that oil was too precious to be burned as fuel. It was there to be traded.
They did. That was the Atoms for Peace that Eisenhower set up, helped them start their first nuclear reactor.
Right.
So the U.S. initially supported Iranian nuclear power. Of course, that was before the revolution.
Yeah, so Gary Sick says in 2005, I mean, up when the Shah was in power, it was okay for Iran to have nuclear power. Now that the clerics took over in 1979, well, no, it's no longer acceptable. But the policy should still be the same. I mean, yes, I mean, the Iranians don't like, the Iranians at the time in the late 70s, early 80s, were hostile to the United States. And there's a lot of, as a matter of fact, much of the 1980s can be understood as the American attempt to get back at Iran, because it was the United States that provoked the Iraq-Iran war. And it did so by pushing Saddam Hussein to attack across the Shatt al-Arab waterway to try to redraw the boundary between the two countries. You see, during the previous boundary split the waterway between two countries, and Saddam Hussein was convinced to have the boundary drawn on the far end, so it could claim the whole waterway for itself, not have to share it with Iran. So he gets pushed and bribed and manipulated into attacking Iran, and then we have about 7 or 8 years of war.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is Iran has never
a nearly
started...
stagnant war as well. It wiped them both out.
That's right, because it began with Iraq having numerous advantages in entering Iranian territory. But then Iran counterattacked around Khorramshahr and pushed and came very close to Baghdad. And then it had the static line, and you're right, it kind of ended in nothing, just a lot of murder and destruction. It was a stupid war. It was a stupid bit of violence for the sake of Israel and the United States.
And ironically, Israel was giving covert support to Iran, not enough to win, but enough to like continue perpetuate the conflict. During the last few years of that war, Israel was supporting Iran, and the U.S. was supporting both sides.
Yeah. Israel just wants to destroy the Middle East. It just wants every Muslim state to collapse. It just wants to walk in and take over everything. Because you know the Annan plan, right?
Oded Yanan, of course. And but you know, a lot that wasn't translated into English and made public. That's really the first that's the real Balkanization before the Balkans was the Yanan plan, which they're implementing or tried to implement in Syria too.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, Iran is again to say Iran is a target of Israel because A, it stands up to Palestinian, it stands up for Palestinian rights. It is a status quo power and it will have nuclear power very soon. And all of these threatens Israel's own nuclear monopoly because it threatens countries with nuclear blackmail. Because it has threatened to send nuclear missiles to various European capitals. And we know this because Martin van Creveld, do you know Martin van Creveld?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know the story, is that he says there are about 200 missiles, you know, pointed at Iranian, at European capitals. And
that was the old Samson option. There's
that's
books
right.
been written about that. That thing was seemed a little silly to me because in that scenario, at least in the book, was taking out European capitals and getting the U.S. and Russia to fight with each other. But if you took out a European capital, you're just going to get nuked back by Europe.
That's possible too, although it all depends to what degree the Europeans are intimidated by Israel and would stand aside and allow Israel to bully it. I mean, you're quite right. They probably would have been attacked, but you're not sure how much the Israeli lobby and the European capitals controls decision making.
Mm-hmm.
But the what's kind of sort of disturbing, and that most people probably aren't aware that. There is no real threat of war. I mean, it's all rhetoric. Iran would not attack Israel. If Israel attacked Iran, Israel would be hit. There's no question about it. And Israel is not stupid. At least you hope it isn't.
And neither one could take over the other in a protracted war. Like Israel
That's
just
right.
doesn't have the military capacity or population. And Iran couldn't do likewise because of all of Israel's allies. So it's just a zero. There's no chance, but they like to point to Iran as a boogeyman to justify an enormous amount of military spending and their aggression towards Hezbollah, Syria, etc. By saying, "Oh, well, these are all Iranian proxies, and Iran's the big bad guy," but really, Israel just wants to annex territory from its neighbors.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's what Nahum Goldman said back in 76 when he was retiring as head of the World Jewish Congress. Israel has no objective other than to get to steal land piece by piece, essentially. It rejects every peace overture from enemies and friends. And this is why Iran is in many ways an ally of Israel, because so long as Iran exists, Israel can justify bloated military spending. It can justify aggression against Syria. Because without a war, without aggression, Israel would die, really. Because it survives so long as it can attack and promote the myth of greater Israel.
Right. It's riding the tiger, and it can't really draw back because the sins they've committed are just unforgivable. I mean, they killed 3 kids yesterday, like 3 more, just, and, you know, of course they say it's in retaliation for what, Palestinians existing, like.
Yeah, this is what, the problem is the media is one of the greatest threats to Western democracy because it does not do a proper job of reporting this issue. You always have your Israel with the presumption of innocence. It's always Israel's point of view that gets presented. And so you can't really say, well, Israel can't even rationalize commit killing children. I mean, surely there was something else that could have been done.
Well, the U.S. media won't even go that far. They just don't even talk about it. Like, they're
exactly.
not saying, oh, it was in defense. They just say nothing. Like, 3 Palestinians were murdered by civilians, killed by a military. It's not, I guarantee you, I'd bet my life that's not on any of the 3-letter networks. It might be
in
some newspapers, maybe, but definitely not on TV. And
no.
Whenever it is brought up, it's always like in blaming the victim, essentially saying, oh, well, it's their fault. They threw rocks or something, you know, like, oh, yeah, well, no problem. Shoot him in the face. He threw a pebble at your military that's pointing guns at them.
Yeah, this is why, again, it's the Zionist control of the media that is really it has really destroyed the United States. I mean, it had been around for some time, but it had accelerated so much under Ronald Reagan that there is not even the pretense of a press in the United States. The Washington Post is so horrible. Jeff Bezos bought it for $1. And now it's one of the worst apologists for Hillary Clinton propaganda and Israel zealotry. But again, we're looking at Iran. I mean, Iran is the target of Israel's aggression, even though Iran is no threat. The whole thing is a dog and pony show. And the media reports it as if it were fact, as if everything that were happening today had some merit, that there was some cause and effect between Iran's nuclear program and the threat it poses to world peace, for example. This is patent rubbish. Mm-hmm. There is not even remotely any cause and effect between whatever Iran is doing and claims of threats to war. Let me read something from 1996. This is Richard Perle. Right, he's one of these, the nastiest, treasonous Zionist in the State Department, in the Pentagon at the time.
One of the ugliest. Found,
he's horrible. He was found to have been given to have passed information onto Israel when he was an assistant to Washington State Senator Henry Scoop Jackson.
He calls himself the Prince of Darkness.
He does.
I mean, that's his own nickname for himself, and he was one of the principal architects for the Iraq War, and friends with all the Iran-Contra goobers. And there's a long list. I hate Richard Perle. He's like the worst neocon ever, you know, except for the original one, Lincoln. But
Lincoln. Okay.
Well, I call Lincoln the original neocon because that was the birthplace of mercantilism and handing corporations the keys to federal government for railroad subsidies, et cetera. And, down entire cities and killing 250,000 people. And, yeah, he's worse than Richard Perle. But I mean, Richard Perle, I mean, he was part of the 822 Raptor profiteering. Him and Mark Rich helped secretly break embargoes. Like, he's got the total data mining, blackmail stuff on people. He set up the Office of Special Plans with Douglas Fife. Like, his whole career is just one crime after another. They even set up IAI, which was an equity firm of three employees just to profiteer off the Iraq War. Like, he is pure scum. And I mean, he's on the board of directors with Kissinger and Fred Felding, which is Bush's lawyer, for that Rand Hollandrink, which is who owns the Jerusalem Post. And then they just use the Jerusalem Post to print their own lies, recycle lies from Judith Miller, etc. I mean, without Richard Perle, that PNAC group and Weekly Standard, it wouldn't work, because most of those guys are idiots. Perle's one of the few intelligent evil bastards. Whereas you guys like Doug Feith, you know, or Rumsfeld, they can't tell an ass from an elbow. But
I mean, they're like Sarah Palin level lost. But Perle is a real architect. He's like the Meyer Lansky of our times. He's just a piece of shit. I hate him. Anyway, I got triggered.
That's great.
I even started a holiday called Hate Richard Perle Day, and I went on the Scott Horton show and I was like, let me tell you why Richard Perle's so bad. And I just for like 30 minutes listed all the stuff he did.
That's brilliant.
He's Hate Richard Perle Day.
See, the thing with Perle and the neocons.
I thought you'd ask me, when is Hate Richard Perle Day?
Okay, yeah. When is Hate Richard Perle Day?
It's every day that ends in Y. Like today.
Nice. Yeah. It's yesterday.
Yeah. It's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
But it's not tomorrow, though, is it?
It's basically every day. I guess you could say Christmas doesn't end in Y, but you could say that it's also on a Friday or something. You could also say it's today. So.
You could hate him today. You could hate him yesterday, but you can't hate him tomorrow.
You really can't hate anyone tomorrow. You can only hate someone today. You can't really anything tomorrow, can you? No. It won't be tomorrow when you're doing it. Sorry.
That sounds like a good George Carlin sketch.
Yeah, that would be like, what do you mean you're going to do something tomorrow? I mean, you will do something. Whatever. I hear you.
No, the thing is with Iran, I mean, Iran has been bound up with Syria for a great many years. I mean, it's almost impossible to discuss the two separately. And recently, we've had the aggression against Syria with the American-funded invasion force, the sort of Free Syria Army that was funded by Turkey,
Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Qatar,
Saudi
the
Arabia,
and
Qatar, yep. Israel, the United States, Britain. This was the sort of the Western foot in the door to try to overthrow Bashar Assad. But the thing that is that it attempts to overthrow Syria have been going on since the early 90s, at least.
Mm-hmm.
This is not news either. The problem is that much of what we see in the world today is not new. This is a recycled story. They have been spinning their wheels for about 30 years on the same program because Israel has been stopping any informed attempt to come up with a Middle East solution to Palestine, Syria, Iran. This is why this problem is seems to be insoluble, is that it's meant to be insoluble. We don't want an end to this. We want
our
to
guy,
keep it.
Richard Perle, again, was the source material for Judith Miller's piece, along with Paul Wolfowitz and Israeli security. He was one of the three sources when Judith Miller wrote her garbage in 2003 saying that Iraq moved its mythical weapons of mass destruction into Syria and that now we have to invade Syria. He did that too.
Yeah, I don't know how he survived as long as he did. He should have been taken out. It would have been so nice for him for that to happen. I mean,
he was the chairman of the Defense Policy Board. Like everyone talks about when Clark has this list of seven countries we're going to invade. Guess who wrote that list? Richard Perle.
Mr. Perle.
Like it came from upstairs, he says. I'm like, well, tell people what that means. That's from the Policy Planning Board. Who's the Secretary for Policy, Richard Perle? Like that's who wrote it. And it was just – and I know like Paul Pillar and like the actual intelligence analysts all and analysis, they all knew, you know, there's a famous – well, it's not famous, but this, for nerds it's famous – hearing where Walter Jones is like the only Republican even listening. But it's like Colonel Wilkerson, who was Colin Powell's chief of staff.
I know Wilkerson.
Paul White and Pillard and Carl and some of the analysts. And they're all talking about the OSP and everything. And they're saying, yeah, it was like some of the what they said was intelligence. It looks just like Chinese menu. It's just not sourced at all. And what was funny is that a staffer for Feinstein is who revealed that these neocons were giving out two packages, like one folder to the analysts and another folder with extra slides and information to senators. And it was one of Feinstein's staffers who then gave like the slides and all that they weren't allowed to see to the actual analysts who actually, you know, sift through those junk and stuff. And that's when they found out about Feist's office and how they were just dogging on him, saying these guys are so dumb. They're not finding a connection between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein and WMD and blah, blah, blah. Of course, there was none and they weren't dumb. They were right, you know, but these guys were like cooking two books, like mafia figures, you know, going, give me this guy, this group, one set of information and another completely different one. And Perle was the linchpin behind all that too. Him and Wolf.
And he's never been charged with anything, has he?
No, he'll never get charged because he sits on the, he's like Kushner. He sits on top of the pile of blackmail. He's the Mickey Cohen of the Defense Department. Total data awareness, he used to call it. But remember that PC Madame list that came out with all those numbers on it? It had Vitter and Cheney and a lot of prominent people on it. I mean, mm-hmm. Perle had his thumbs on everything. He's just a disgusting. You're not going to get any sexual blackmail on Richard Perle. I mean, nobody would touch that thing. Not even a hooker. Like he looked like he had permanently like been punched in both eyes and just he had like six chins. Ugh, he looked like fish lip. It looked like a monster, like of a fairy tale, like a goblin or something.
Sounds like Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah, Jabba the Hutt. That was Richard Perle. And he always looked old and disgusting, even when he wasn't old. That's just him. Yeah. Hate
no,
Richard
it's
Perle.
A very nice analogy. Yeah, it is. It is like a mafia organization. Israel treats America like the same way the mafia treated Newark, New Jersey. Which was essentially a small little, you know, vacation town. The mafia gets in and just destroys it. It just sucks the life out of it. Created massive crime, and this there's a great series called Murder Incorporated. Mm-hmm. If you ever get a chance to see it, it talks about one of the things is the destruction of Newark, New Jersey.
Newark right now is the capital import center of opium from Afghanistan.
I mean, the
mob still runs the airport and they bring the opium right in there. And if you look at the death rates from heroin, opium base, and then the rest of the opium derivatives, New Jersey is way ahead of every other state. And because that is the first place it's distributed. And I was going to do a film on that, but the guy I was doing it with, who was financing it, Skittles, you know, it didn't work anyway. And I think he had a family member who was actually like doing heroin and was personally involved in it and all, but it just never fell through. But I had already started the research and everything, and man, Jersey is hit hard. If you look at the heroin deaths in the United States, I mean, just Google a graph after this podcast, guys. It's bad in New Jersey, and it's coming straight into Newark. And this has a historic chain back to what you're talking about with Murder Incorporated, with the kind of Silver Age mafia goons who took over that town, or it's a city now, and completely destroyed it. I mean, it's all mob. It's terrible.
Yep. Yeah, that's Sopranos territory.
Yeah, and Soprano is based on Tony Salerno, who is one of Trump's main guys.
I wonder if anybody's brought
that up.
Roy
Cohen, and see, Trump played the Gambino and Gervasi families off on one another, but, I mean, because he ran Atlantic City. And I did make a movie about that. It's called Trump's Zionist Ball and Chain, God's Not a Real Estate Agent, but it goes over the real estate gambit in New York and how just inseparable it is from organized crime. And, he knew Bob Labudi. Trump, how the Democrats, having gone after Trump for this, you know, his obvious mob connections and all the shenanigans they did, ironically, even using illegal immigrants to bust up strikes and build the foundations of Trump Tower with ready-mix concrete, which he got from the mob, that they don't go after. They go after him for saying, grab her by the pussy, or like language policing, you know. It's just like Kavanaugh. They got all on this guy's case about some fake rape story and didn't say, oh yeah, when he was working in the Bush administration, he was like passing torture documents across his desk and illegally, you know, torturing people. That didn't come up. It's all like some woman in the 70s that said he put his hand on my mouth. And, it's this controlled opposition. I get so sick of it. But anyway, you were saying Murder Incorporated took over Newark.
Yeah. Yes. But, I mean, this is why so we're talking about the way that Pearl, Israel has essentially reduced America to a shell. I mean, it's basically been exploiting it the same way, on a larger scale, the way than the small scale, the way that the mafia came into Newark and basically ruined it, exploited, took all the life out of it. This is what's happened to the United States. And Pearl, again, you have much more of updated information about Pearl. I didn't spend that much time on Pearl, but you have such great information.
I got a lot of hate. No.
I'd love to see a long Rolling Stone article about him, just sort of exposing
them. I could just nail that. I probably have written a lot of crap on him. He just, if you want to know why something's going wrong, like, first thing to check is, what did Pearl do yesterday? Because he's always in the middle of it, all the time. He's the worst. I have a neocon ranking. It's not like, you know, it's a subjective thing, obviously, but he's at the top. One of the number seven just kicked the bucket, though. That was John McCain. He's gone. Mm. I like saying that whenever I can for no reason, because I'm happy about it.
McCain was a nasty piece of work, but he ended up becoming more, he gave with a reputation better than he deserved. But don't forget, McCain was also one of those people who supported the Taliban when they first took over in Afghanistan. Because he helped one of the people that entertained them down in the Sugar Land offices in Texas. But then John McCain would flip-flop back and forth.
Did he set fire to any boats?
I want to get back a little bit to Syria.
Hey, McCain was very friendly to the Vietnamese. He helped them in their war. Sorry.
Yeah,
I mean Viet Cong. Okay. I should say Viet Cong, Northern Vietnam.
No, I want to get back a little bit.
McCain went to Syria too. And McCain met with Raoul Sham and he met with all kinds of terrorists. He's like, I talk to him every day. And it seemed like wherever McCain went, it was like the pale horse of the Bible. We're like, here comes McCain. There's a disaster to follow. But yeah, he was in Syria, and we were arming Raoul al-Sham through the State Department legally. They're not considered terrorists. We call them the moderate rebels, along with the FSA. Now they're considered terrorists under the Trump administration. But all through Obama Hillary era, it was, well, these guys are moderate head choppers. They moderately cut off heads. They whistle while they do it. I don't know how they got to that determination, but.
Yeah, this is, again, to understand why America would do that, you'd have to understand this was not in America's self-interest to get involved in Syria. There's no point to it. But the tragedy is that the entire Syrian episode was merely a means to an end. I mean, if it weren't for the fact that Hezbollah was operating out of Lebanon in southern Syria, and that Syria and Iran had a good relationship, there would have been none of this. Because Syria is merely a stepping stone to get to Iran. And this is what has been clearly stated by the United States and by Israel. So don't forget that during the 2008 campaign, it was Hillary Clinton who went on Good Morning America and said, and I quote, "I want Iranians to know that if I'm president, we will attack Iran. In the next 10 years, during which they might foolishly consider launching an attack on Israel, we will be able to totally obliterate them." Now, this is a language of a woman who wants to become president. She's talking about obliterating a country that would never in its wildest dreams attack Israel out of the blue. So this is why, if you look at the news reports, people should not pay attention to anything.
I don't believe Iran has ever attacked anybody out of the blue.
No, it hasn't.
Not since like ancient history times, you know. I don't think it's ever happened.
And even during the great Persian-Greek wars, it was the Greeks that provoked it, believe it or not.
Right.
It wasn't the Persians. So we have the United States essentially doing Israel's wet work. It's trying to provoke a war with Iran for the sole purpose of destroying a potential nuclear power in the Middle East. And this is the same country, Iran, that was Israel's chief supplier of oil up until 1979.
That's in Jimmy Carter's book, by the way. They got 90% of the oil from Sinai Peninsula in Iran.
That's right.
Egypt and Iran. That was almost exclusively all of their oil. That got replaced by Iraq later.
So what concerns me is we have people, for example, we're talking about Richard Pearl earlier, right? He says, when he wrote Clean Break, which was the blueprint, the first blueprint for neocon coup d'etat against the Constitution. And there's been a couple of them, at least. She said, Syria challenges Israel on Lebanese soil. And if Israel seized the strategic initiative along its northern borders by engaging Hezbollah, Syria and Iran as the principal agents of aggression in Lebanon would be eliminated. So here we have Richard Pearl attacking Syria selectively in 1996, attacking Syrian targets in Lebanon.
In a paper that he wrote for a foreign head of state, because Netanyahu has been prime minister twice, and he's writing this for that Likudnik Bibi Netanyahu. And most of the Clean Break paper is not about Iran, it's about Syria, because it's saying, well, we can't really deal with Iran until we deal with Syria. So it all focuses on Syria. And it kind of is a sort of an updated ODED plan. I mean, it's here's where we're at now, guys. And it has grammatical mistakes, which I just think is funny.
This is exactly why people need to understand Syria and Iran is the same issue. Mm-hmm. These are not to be separated in, for example, any alleged bombing of gas attack in Damascus. That could not be used as an excuse to attack Syria, because the decision to attack Syria had been taken long ago. They needed an excuse to attack. And what we see in the United States is the invention of excuses to attack Syria and Iran. America has a warmongering mentality. It cannot cope with peace in the Middle East because that's not what Israel wants. And since Israel effectively runs the United States is essentially a client state. And so all it does is take marching orders from Israel. So if you look at Syria and the attacks on Syria, don't think of it as anything to do with any specific policy. And the real sad news is that it's just a means to an end. So whatever suffering the Syrians are undergoing, it's not because anybody hates them. It's just business. It's just getting rid of Syria to get to Iran. And this is why we have to look at the United States not in control of its own foreign policy. And when Donald Trump speaks, or whether that glabrous imbecile Mike Pompeo speaks, he's not speaking for the United States. He's not speaking for the Constitution. Right now, the International Court of Justice has told the United States that it wants to suspend sanctions against Iran to ensure that they do not affect humanitarian aid or civil aviation safety. The International Court of Justice ruled this, and Mike Pompeo with the he looks almost like Netanyahu. I know he's got this sort of fat, overly pudgy face and this smug little look on his face. He's saying, well, we're going to ignore that. We're not going to obey. We're going to close the consulate in Basra, relocate diplomatic personnel. So in any way, the United States has admitted that it's an outlaw nation again. Mm-hmm. It's not going to obey international law because Israel is a living contempt of international law. And whatever integrity the United States had or may have had as a defender of the law against aggressive nations is completely gone out the window. There's not even the pretense of America being a democracy, republic or otherwise. It's a police state, and it's been taken over by the Kosher Nostra.
And American cops are actually trained in Israel. Hilarious is now some of them are learning this. It's repackaged women's self-defense that they call Krav Maga. I actually know the guy that made it up. He was in California, and he just wanted to sell a martial art to Jews. So he's like, it's Israeli. And so lo and behold, it like ended up on A&E and the History Channel and all this. And now the entire Israeli military studies it. It's just like eyes, knees, groin, throat. It's a bullshit martial art. That's why you'll never see Krav Maga in the UFC or anything because it doesn't work. It's like you can't. But they hype it up enough. And it's easy to bullshit somebody about fighting who doesn't fight. They just like, I don't know, I guess so. Because you're not going to be hand-to-hand fighting in a modern war. And if you are, you already lost. You know, you're going to shoot guns and things. But it's Krav Maga. And they just packaged it as there are no. All the martial arts are from Japan, except for like three. There's Kung Fu from China, and then Hapkido and Taekwondo were actually, they're both Korean, but they both came from Koreans who served in the Japanese military in Japan and then brought it back with them. So there's nothing there's nothing. They hate me saying that, but that is a fact. and my wife's Korean. Like, I'm pro-Korea too. I happen to live in Japan, but I'm just telling the truth here. Like, karate, jujitsu, mm-hmm. Bushido, Aikido, all that stuff is Japanese. And a special reason why it developed, and we're going to skip over all that stuff, but Krav Maga is a brand new bullshit martial art invented by two guys in Los Angeles. And now they're training their police with this stuff. And I'm like, if you try and do that and that person resists, you're going to get fucked up. everything they do is deception, man. It's just like, oh, but they're so egotistical. They're like, yeah, this is an Israeli art. I'm like, no, it's not.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the police angle because it shows that the way that that Israel manages to infiltrate the United States at a sub-governmental level. I mean, if you look at everything in the States, from the education system, the business, the media, the military, government, state government, civic government, you have Israel like a disease. It metastasizes throughout the United States. Mm-hmm. And to get rid of it, I mean, I'm just thinking of something like The Matrix. You know, you have to kill attack the Matrix so all the little squiddly sort of just stop and they just die on the spot.
You got to stake the father vampire to get all the offspring that get dead.
Or if you look at War of the Worlds, you have the bacteria that killed the invading forces. We have to hope for something like that because Israel is so part of the United States now. I call it Isra-America because there is no America left.
Yeah, I always complain. How come Israel gets two UN ambassadors and the U.S. gets none? Because Nikki Haley might as well just take her United States little nameplate thing and throw it in the trash and put Israel up there. That's all she talks about. And when Bolton had that position, he was the same way.
Bolton is really hilarious. I've got a chapter about Bolton in my book. And we look at, he was a psychopath and he was predatory. He actually could be arrested for sexual assault. Mm-hmm. He should have been arrested. But Bolton is insane. And the fact that he gets appointed to be national security advisor under Trump really confirms that the Israeli infrastructure has co-opted him.
I think calling him insane is not hyperbole either. Like, he's insane.
No.
Yeah.
He's like, he's one of these, I call him the jack-off missile Johnny glass parking lot crew. He's one of them. Except he's actually in a position to do something. He's not some redneck on his couch being like, we ought to turn the Middle East into a glass parking lot. Like, one of those guys is now a national security advisor.
Yeah.
Digest.
And this is how Israel has co-opted Trump. Mike Pompeo is just as bad. Mike Pompeo replaced Rex Tillerson, who, although an ex-Exxon executive, should never have been Secretary of State to begin with. Mm-hmm. But he was a businessman, and he had a sense of intelligence about him. He knew what was going on was wrong. And he stood up to Trump's excesses, and he got fired for it. So now you have a Zionist yes man as the Secretary of State. And again, this goes as to how the Zionists have co-opted Trump.
No, he's upholding tradition. was the last
But the problem is that Trump, people who support Trump, especially during the election, saw him as something different. He was like someone who was not going to perpetuate the sort of irresponsible aggression that had been taking place since Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama. He was going to be the man. He said it himself. He was going to stop all these adventurous wars in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I believe
people
thought
the same thing about Obama. They was hope porn, is what we call it, hope porn. And of course, he was just Bush's third term.
And that's exactly right. That's in my book as well. It was the I consider Bush. I didn't put Obama as a second stage in the Zionization of America because he looked like he was just continuation of Bush. You like Bush, Black Bush, mm-hmm. and. But I did change a little bit when I put in Trump, and in the third chapter, I put Trump and Obama together because they actually are similar, more similar than they are different, because they both ended up attacking Muslim countries after having said they wouldn't. I mean, it was Hillary Clinton who got them involved in Libya.
That was her war, but Obama was spineless enough to let her do it, you know.
Yeah, it was a spinelessness. Again, exactly right. Because here, I think that Hillary Clinton was Israel's voice at the cabinet table.
I don't know why he put her at second state, but, you know, Obama and Netanyahu actually personally hate each other. But it didn't matter, even though he's gaffy and he did everything they wanted. I mean, invaded Libya. He started the whole conflict in Syria. He did everything they wanted. He put sanctions on Iran and then he took them off. But that was more from pressure of the rest of the world that said, what are you doing? We want trade. And it was like, oh my gosh, you went against a single demand, sorta. And so that's Israel's so used to getting everything it wants that mm-hmm. he just hate him. Oh, Netanyahu is also an unapologetic racist. And I'm not one of these people that says, oh, you're racist. Like, no, he is. He really is.
Yeah. No, and... Again, the American public, I mean, I hope that most of them now are becoming more aware of that the media is a professional fabrication factory. The whole concept of fake news is actually a mistaken concept because everything out there is fake to some degree. I mean, the United States has given the media permission to lie mm-hmm. in the service of the national government, and it did so in 2012. So we end up with a scenario where people are being force-fed this nonsense about Israel or Iran being a threat for nuclear power. There's Syria is a threat to Israel, when in fact it isn't. Let me read you something from Shai Feldman. He's Jewish. He's the director of the Brandeis University's Crown Center for Middle East Studies. And this is what he said about Israel and Iran. It's not that the day after Iran gets the nuclear bomb, they'll drop it on Tel Aviv. It's rather the many general geopolitical implications of a nuclear Iran that concern Israel. One is that it would lead other countries in the region to follow suit. Two is that an Iran equipped with nuclear weapons would throw its weight around the region to a much greater extent than is currently the case. Which means, in other words, that if Iran develops nuclear power, Israel's monopoly is broken, and that Israel has to deal with a country on an equal footing. It means that there will be a genuine balance of power in the Middle East, and Israel cannot stand that. So Israel in no way fears a military attack from Iran. That is patent rubbish. And yet, that's what constitutes the substance of American rhetoric. Like the one from Hillary Clinton saying Israel, Iran's going to attack Israel. Well, that's an outright lie. So why would an American politician outright lie about a country unless that politician was taking orders from somebody else? There's no excuse for this.
It's not in American interest. It's very clear.
No, it never was.
Let me float something by you, because they don't even want Iran having nuclear power for electricity, much less a bomb, because they're like 3% enrichment, 20% for medical isotopes. You need over 90% to make a bomb. So they're not even remotely close to that. The whole world knows it. That's why the whole world's willing to trade with Iran and not put sanctions on Iran outside of the U.S. because of its kowtowing to Israel. However, yeah, if Iran does get nuclear power, in meaning power like electrical power, that frees up all the oil and gas that they currently consume on electricity, which would let them put that on the open market, which would make Iran much richer than it is now. And they would no longer be under this IMF for debt gambit, because they could pay for their own things interest-free, loan-free. And they don't want them escaping that stranglehold that is implemented on so many countries, where it's like, oh, yeah, yeah, especially a lot of places in Africa, like, yeah, we'll build this road for you. We'll build this hospital, whatever, for a price that you can never repay. And then, you know, it's, yeah, that's part of it, I think, is the banking sector of it. They freeze Iran's assets, you know, and they don't want them reaching that real first world status.
Well, this is what the Shah wanted, right? He wanted to sell his oil for profit, didn't want to burn it because that was just a waste of a beautiful resource. He wanted nuclear power. This is exactly what the Shah wanted. And the United States is grossly hypocritical for wanting to oppose Iran's nuclear power. And speaking of bombs, if you go back to 2005, which is a key year for this, because this is the second year after Bush becomes president, the second term, there's a lot of information about Iran that turns out to be very contradictory and is forming the foundation for much of what's going on today. Hmm. In 2005, the National Intelligence Estimate projected that Iran was at least a decade away from manufacturing key fissile material. And that's twice as long as stated in the previous 1995 estimate. So Iran was never really a threat to develop nuclear power.
And that's really step one. If somebody's 10 years away, that's if you had done nothing at all, it takes about 10 years. So it's like it's misleading the public. It's like Japan is 10 years away also, and they're not even aiming at it. And it's always like 10 years away, 10 years away. But Israel, that entire time from 2005 to like mid-2007, they kept saying 6 months away. And I think it's Mother Jones. I don't often read liberal stuff, but they did a really good breakdown of like all the times where they were 6 months away. There's somebody wrote an article that just grabbed all the articles that said they're 6 months away, 6 months away. I think it's in Mother Jones. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but it's really funny.
it's exactly right. A lot of numbers that are thrown out they're only for rhetorical purposes. They're not meant to be taken literally. Remember, I was talking about 2005, that Iran was, you know, 10 years away from even remotely being able to put together a nuclear bomb. Well, 2 years earlier, in 2003, Ariel Sharon said, Iran, Syria, and Libya must be disarmed of weapons
of mass
destruction. And a successful move in Iraq would make that easier to achieve. So here we have Sharon pushing, again, the American involvement in Iraq, claiming that Iran has a weapon of mass destruction. It doesn't. Everything we see in rhetoric, anything we see in the press, is a complete fabrication. It's not relevant.
It's worse than a fabrication. It's projection. Because everything they accused of Iraq and Iran of, Israel is guilty of itself. Israel does have a secret nuclear program. Israel does have nuclear weapons and other WMDs. Israel has used chemical and biological weapons on civilians. They kill their own people, quote unquote, since they're killing Palestinians. They are guilty of everything that they projected onto Iraq and Iran. So not only are they lying, they are guilty of the same things that they're lying about openly.
Because
they
if they can condemn
the United States, they have attacked American ships, and they are destabilizing. They do attack their neighbors, unlike Iran.
Because if you could attack Iran or Syria, you could provide rhetorical cover. Because if you're focused on those, you're not going to pay attention to what Israel has. Mm-hmm. And this is a sort of a bit of sleight of hand. It's a bit of misdirection. As a magician, you can appreciate that. Everything in the media is misdirection. I've got a great quote from Kurt Nimmo. You know Kurt Nimmo?
Yeah, I know.
Great journalist.
Kurt Nimmo.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he was working for Sibel. I used to work for her. I got out, though.
Oh, I like Sibel Edmonds.
Mm-hmm.
She is.
Yeah.
In 2005, in February, he made this statement about Israel and imperial design. See if this sounds familiar. Israel is determined to take revenge on Hezbollah, which defeated its attempts to turn Lebanon into an Israeli protectorate and drove Israeli occupation forces from Lebanon. A small but vicious war, this writer saw firsthand. Israel and the venal Strauss-Kahns want chaos, misery, death, starvation, ethnic strife, and endless violence, not only in Syria and Iran, but in the entire Arab and Muslim Middle East.
Yeah.
That is essentially American policy, and that is Israeli policy. And this has been stated repeatedly, not only in 2005, but going back to 1996, and I believe you can find it going back as far as the early 1980s.
Well, that's straight out of Oded Yanan, right? Because they said he was comparing what they would like to do in Syria as was done in Lebanon, because Lebanon had a horrible 15-year-long sectarian war between all these different Muslim groups, Christians, and, you know, that's what they wanted to re-implement in Syria and Iraq. Get the Kurds and Shia and Sunni and all these divisions and have
every Arab on Arab death benefits Israel. I'm paraphrasing. And that was written in the 80s.
So I'm just hoping that people listening to this recognize that nothing in the press can be taken at face value. I'm sure many of your listeners are smart enough to realize that.
I think my listeners are. Yeah. I mean, if CNN said the sky was blue, I'd run outside and make sure it hadn't changed.
are you familiar with Flint Leverett?
I don't know Flint Leverett. Who's that?
He was a senior staffer at the National Security Council, the State Department, the CIA. And he comes out very strongly against the neocon mentality. This is also in my book in 2005. He says the neocons who want regime change and nothing else. The president on this is resistant to the idea of doing a deal, even a deal that would solve the nuclear problem. Presidents don't want deals. They want violence. They want war. Because if they do a deal, like Obama did with Iran, they're made out to look like cowards or weaklings. And we had Donald Trump, and one of his stupidest statements during the campaign was that somehow he thought the deal with Iran was terrible. But he had no basis for saying that. It was simply the fact that a country managed to benefit from something, from an arrangement with the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is, if you have a deal with a nuclear power, that means you have stability. And if you remember, we just had the statement from Kurt Nimmo, stability is the enemy of Israel. So the United States right now is working to provoke a war with Iran behind the scenes. Bolton, Pompeo, everybody is working to prepare outside of the media, outside of the public sight, some excuse to attack.
They can't until they finish off Yemen, though. I was just explaining this because Saudi Arabia, it looks like, is going to get their port in Yemen, and they're already connecting it with a pipeline in North Yemen. Because if a war in Iran ever does break out, the first thing Iran's going to do is shut down the Strait of Hormuz, which would close off Saudi's exports to the east, which would screw up the entire planet. So they have to bypass the Strait of Hormuz, which is why Saudi Arabia is so militantly and unapologetically bombing the hell out of Yemen, civilians, starving them, etc., to grab that coastal real estate so they can set up their own port like the UAE did in Socotra and bypass the Strait of Hormuz. So I wouldn't worry about the hot war in Iran going. I think they'll more likely sponsor proxies like Jundallah, MEK, etc., just like they did ISIS in Syria. But as far as the, you know, real push for war,
not until Yemen is done. That's why if we can defeat them in Yemen, we can prevent this war in Iran from ever happening. So, I mean, you shouldn't want war in Yemen anyway, but there's some extra motivation, folks.
Well, I think we're almost out of time. I hate to say it. It's now 10 o'clock here.
Oh, shoot, yeah. Well, I was late, folks. That's my fault. And I had tech issues, so it's Skype, man. I don't know. I'm such a boomer with technology anyway. I admit it.
Yeah. Especially the people controlling it.
You are always welcome back. You're a fountain of knowledge, and I normally don't get to you know what I'm saying anyway. You know, I hog the mic sometime. You're like, oh yeah, we could go back and forth on Richard Perle tit for tat probably, you know, and that would be a fun day. Just like pick a neocon. You say something terrible, I'll say something terrible. Like Perle also is the one who got Blackwater their first start. Remember that? He started them in Azerbaijan, right? So yeah, just trash the neocons. But your books,
I'd love to see a book about Richard Perle. That'd be great. I think you should write it. I'll edit it for you.
I think I'll probably just write a long article. I don't know if I guess there's a book in there. You really want to do that? We can do that. I hate that guy. Yeah, I mean, he's almost on his last leg anyway. I'm going to have a party when he dies, by the way. We had I had a McCain Still Dead t-shirt, but it just got taken down 2 days ago. So, you guys, when I put out a shirt, you got to buy it right away, especially when it's super offensive, because they will shut it down. It was great. It was like McCain as a zombie face and said still dead, because he had like a 22-day funeral. Like, oh, well, I thought he was having a world tour with that casket. And so
I don't think Lennon ever had that long a funeral.
No, just McCain. He was like... Not even John Lennon had that big of a... So the McCain, the back of the shirt, we did it like an old 80s like punk rock thing, like tour dates on the back. And it said, John McCain Still Dead World Tour, places he won't be visiting anymore. And it had all of them listed with lines slashed through, like cancel. And it said Vietnam, Arizona, Washington, D.C., Syria. Like, all the places he had been and screwed up were all canceled out. I thought it was a brilliant shirt, but
it is great. It's wonderful satire.
If I find a third publisher, this would be my third one, I will print it again and sell it again. I don't know why they canceled me. I'm like, I'm just gonna find another t-shirt place. There's like a zillion of them, and I'm gonna print it again. So, but yeah,
I would buy one.
I gotta make a Richard Perle shirt. I gotta think of something. I gotta think of like the worst thing ever.
You could do a satire about the Black Pearl and do like a Pirates of the Caribbean thing. I don't know.
I can feel like he's like when he finally dies, he'll be sitting in Satan's chair and Satan will be like the number two. Yeah.
That's a great picture. I can see that.
I wonder if hell would take him. It'd be like Lobo. Like he can't get into heaven, obviously, and he's too. And even hell doesn't want him, so he's just suspended somewhere. I don't know. Richard Perle, anyway, though.
Before I go, I do want to mention my books again, just to do think they can pick up a copy. Much of what I've said here about the about Syria and Iran is in my book, especially the Trump chapter and the chapter toward the end about Syria and Iran, where it goes into detail about how the neocons use them as one item to undermine balance in the Middle East.
It's also really one of the few, maybe only, books that do that. Like people will write about that or say that in an article here or there, but I don't know of another book that went into detail about this is one unit and this is like that really just told the truth like you just did.
Yeah.
It's the only one with details, you know, and backing it up all the way back to the 90s. They said this and this. You have all this documentation making your case, which I love. Yeah. I'm a detail. I'm autistic for that stuff. So that's
I've got hundreds upon hundreds of footnotes.
Yeah, it's overkill. Like it, but that's I like that. You got to prove your case. I mean, our own DIA was admitting we were supporting a Salafist principality in Syria and all that. But you got to get it like, but why? Why Syria? Well, it's you get Syria and you screw up Iran and Hezbollah. But Iran is the ultimate boogeyman. That's when Ariel Sharon wanted to hit Iran first. You know, that was they're. It ain't going to happen, though, if we can stop him in Yemen. I'm confident about that.
Yeah. Anyway, The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America. Mm-hmm. I'm really happy with that title. It took me a long time to come up with it. And I've been criticized for being too overt about it. But I think it sort of sums up essentially what Israel has done to the United States. It has destroyed it. It has consumed it. It is preying on its carcass now. And when that carcass is dead, they're going to go off to someplace else.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like Pat Buchanan said, occupied territory in the U.S. Congress. Yep. For sure.
It is. And I've cited him with great approval in my book.
I have to have you on to talk about the Six-Day War sometime. That's what I love.
Yes.
Just sit and listen to you, really.
Yeah. I'd love to. Yeah, that's in my book as well.
Because that's like, man, I've had that argument so many times. And I had Jeff Gates on here, and I know people in the war room that were there, and the Israelis just nonchalantly being like, no, don't worry, because they knew they started it, and they knew everything. But all the quotes you have from the Israelis themselves, even, you know, like, that's a conversation I'm looking forward to right there.
Well, we can do that sometime next month. You give me a call, and we'll set this up.
Yeah, I'm glad I discovered you. It's like,
a fan or something. It wasn't even your manager, right? Like somebody put
it. That's right. It was a fan in Las Vegas. Saw my book, loved it, wanted to get me some speaking tours. He wanted to get me a speaking engagement in Las Vegas, but that somehow it didn't come off. And some other people were essentially too skittish to have me speak for whatever reason. Anyway, he finds you and puts me in touch with you, and ba-boom.
Yeah, I start looking at your work. I'm like, yeah, I understand why you if you've seen my work. Like, yep.
You all get along. Hey, if you want to do a presentation together or something, I'm in the West Coast now and then. I can get down to at least to California. I don't know, though. I'm thinking about doing a sort of West Coast anti-APAC conference type of thing, just going over all the ways they fuck us sideways. I wouldn't put it that way at the conference, but you know, gathering up some people and doing something like that. So possibly.
Let me know. I'm in southwestern British Columbia. I'm about 2 hours from the border.
Closer than I am, anyway.
Yeah.
I'm always the furthest one. Like that game where like, oh, we're all at meet in DC, and somebody came from Canada or somebody came from Florida. I'm like, Japan. All right. Although I had there from Australia one time. That might have been further.
Yeah. What's halfway? Hawaii? I don't know.
From to Japan to the United States?
Yeah.
Mm.
Not quite.
Guam, maybe? Hawaii? I don't know. It's the ocean is halfway. There's nothing halfway, yeah. I guess. South
Alaska? Yeah, on one of the Aleutian Islands, maybe?
I've been to the Aleutian Islands. It's kind of interesting. It's very isolated.
Yeah, I would imagine, yeah. It'd be a great surprise if somebody went to the Aleutian Islands and there's just like some huge resort there and everybody, no one knows, like just everybody's getting down Dutch in the Harbor. Aleutian Islands, yeah.
Dutch Harbor is the only real large establishment there. That's on Amaknak Island, but it's only, when I was there, it had like one hotel.
Mm-hmm.
It had a big, some supermarket and a bunch of offices. It was really Spartan. Nothing much going on there.
Well, I'm from a small island. I remember people asking me when I was a kid, not now, it's changed a lot, but they're like, do y'all have running water? And I would like, I'd say, I mean, we did. I'd say, every high tide, you know, or some smart ass remark. You know? Because sometimes, like, the electricity would just go off. It would just disappear. As any 78 mile long, like above ground telephone and cable lines, you know, at any point, if something went down somewhere, it cut everything off south of it. And we would just power. But we'd just like, all right, go outside and play basketball or something. You know, there's no electricity again.
You tell an American you're from Canada and they went, isn't it cold up there? Or don't you guys?
No, it's sunny all the time. Did you know? They ask you about polar bears.
Yeah, it's a bit, but Americans are so clueless about anything about with Canada. This is one thing, if you ever get a chance to see on YouTube, you can see Talking to Americans. It's it was a small little sketch that Rick Mercer did when he was on a show called This Hour is 22 Minutes. And he would go down to the States. He would talk to politicians, men on the street, professors. And you would ask them these silly
questions.
Those
are like the three dumbest things: professors, politicians, and street vendors.
Well, I'm serious. I think he talked to the governor of Colorado. I'm not sure, but he says he congratulated Saskatchewan on getting its new naval on its navy, and of course Saskatchewan is landlocked. Congratulations.
Well, the governor of Colorado is probably stoned out of his mind, so come on. Colorado, if you look at a map of America now since marijuana legalization, Colorado is just a giant cloud. It's just a big cloud.
I just like the one about the congratulations, Kat, on getting your first paved road. Ah. You know, we just got paved roads, you know. Thank you for stopping the illegal polar bear hunt. It's truly amazing.
Is it true the Mounties ride on moose?
That's right. We do.
See, yeah. My stereotype of Canada growing up would have just been like the Hart Foundation from WWF. But my modern stereotype would have to be Ricky and Julian from Trailer Park Boys. It is my dream to imagine that from coast to coast is nothing but Sunnyvale trailer parks all the way across Canada. That's how the whole country is. They're chasing each other with hockey sticks and all that. That's what I want to choose to believe. No. It has a warm place in my heart.
If you ever get a chance to see reruns of a show called SCTV, Second City Television, it was done out of Toronto. It was a fake news TV station done by Canadians. It has some of the most brilliant satire you've ever seen, and it was a great show. It was done on a very low budget. It was a lot of work.
Like The Onion.
The guys were The Onion. Yeah, well, I don't know, possibly The Onion, but SCTV was brilliant, and they had great Canadian humor.
Was Kids in the Hall Canadian? Do you remember that one?
Oh yes, I remember Kids in the Hall. I believe some of them were.
I don't know. Remember who? Maybe it was co-produced or whatever. But that was a funny, short-lived thing too. But
it was. Sure. It was a bit bizarre at times too.
If you go back and watch an old Kids in the Hall, there's this episode of them like making fun of some ultra-liberal professor like gender shaming them and stuff like that, and they're all how ridiculous that would be. But now it's reality. It's something else. They're telling the future, like The Simpsons. The Simpsons would make sarcastic jokes that would never happen, and then they've happened.
Yeah, there's a great Simpsons episode where they're talking about the Constitution, and Homer says, "Isn't that against the Constitution?" And Bart says, "No, I'm quite sure the Patriot Act did away with that." Okay, yeah.
Well, we're coming up on the anniversary of the Patriot Act. That's nothing to celebrate or anything, but yep.
It has to be repealed in its entirety because it was done, as you know, the Patriot Act was written before
Trade Center's Act. We can talk about 9/11 sometime too, but don't just whip out 300 plus page documents out of the blue. I'm like, oh yeah, I just had this sitting on my desk, you know, and we know the origins of that. And don't look at Wikipedia because they don't tell you the truth.
Oh, yeah, Wikipedia. Nobody in his right mind takes Wikipedia seriously. Oh, what you can do is look at the sources and go to the sources and maybe evaluate them, but no Wikipedia article can be taken at face value. I mean, that's been Zionized.
They get paid to edit it. I mean, you might as well listen to Ezra Levant or somebody for your news. It's just terrible. It's worthless.
Oh, that guy is hilarious.
He's Canadian.
He lied.
You got to claim that one.
He's he's a disgrace. So it was Justin Bieber, for that matter. Yeah, he libeled me.
Well, what's wrong with her?
Justin Bieber?
Yeah, she's all right. She sings. I mean, did she? Is that a boy?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was a chick. I don't know.
He's got this sort of androgynous about him.
Yeah, that's the like thing in rock stars, I guess. I suppose they do that in Korea too. It's kind of a baby face. I thought it was like a clone of Hannah Montana.
You mean Miley Cyrus? She's almost like a quasi porn princess.
I only knew her from the Hannah Montana. I never saw the Miley part, but Well, I get it filtered media in Japan. I just get like the crumbs, you know. It was funny. I went back to the U.S. I hadn't been there in like 6 years. I'm like, who the hell is Hannah Montana? And they're like, oh my gosh, you've missed all this. I'm like, oh, I wouldn't say I was missing it. but yeah, there was a whole bunch of stuff that happened like that was famous. I didn't know who the Kardashians were. All I knew is people kept saying, oh, everyone's paying attention to Kardashians. I'm like, no. I'd see that, but I'm like, well, who is it though? People thought
someone says Kardashian, I say Gesundheit.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't know that Caitlyn / Bruce Jenner was on that show because everyone's saying, well, I liked him as an athlete, but not as I'm like, what? He wasn't a famous athlete. Like most Olympians aren't famous. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, what do you run or swim? Or no, except for Michael Phelps, maybe. Like that's them pretending like they knew who he was. Like you didn't follow his Olympic career. You just saw him on that reality show with the Turkish ladies or whatever. Nah, I knew it was coming from somewhere else. Anyway, I'll let you go, man. I kept you too long.
Okay, thanks a lot, Ryan. Be great for
we'll do the 6 day war in the future.
The 6 day war, the 6 day turkey shoot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Catch you later.